AM 1280 The Patriot, the Northern Alliance Radio Network. Brian St. Paul Ward, King Banyan, I'm Mitch Berg. And your phone calls at 651-289-4488. It is indeed down to this, the second half hour. Guest we've been looking forward to talking to for a long time. Stephen Vincent, author of Into the Red Zone, one of my favorite books about the entire Iraq War so far, I believe I can say without fear of contradiction by my fellow members here in the booth here. That's one of our favorite books about the war so far. Stephen Vincent, you are on your way back to Iraq very shortly here.
Yeah, I'm leaving on Monday, in fact.
Wow. So you're doing any other publicity for this before you head out over?
Not really, because I'm not really sure what I'm going to find there. I mean, I have a contract to write a second book, but it's really contingent upon my ability to get around. I'm going to be concentrating on southern Iraq, Basra in particular. But they their attitude toward Americans and journalists has hardened a bit over the last year, so I'm not sure exactly what kind of access I'm going to have.
Yeah, I was going to ask you more about that. Now, obviously, you have a book that has gotten you a little more of a profile, I would assume, here and there, I would imagine. Do you anticipate having tell the listener the story about your first trips to Iraq that went into your first book, Into the Red Zone.
Well, yeah, real quickly, I didn't really think much about Iraq like most of us until 9/11, which I witnessed the attack on my rooftop on the Lower East Side where I live, saw the World Trade Center come down and all that, and decided I wanted to participate in the war, serve my country the best I could. I'm too old to enlist, so I put my writing talents to use and went to Iraq in the fall of 2003 and then again in the winter and spring of 2004. I mean, I paid my own way and did my own writing, and then wrote a book about it called In the Red Zone. But there's still some unfinished business, some questions I still want to look at, and I really got interested in Basra for various reasons, and so that's taking me for a third trip.
Now, why Basra? I mean, what's interested you in the southern part of Iraq?
Well, there's practical considerations. I mean, as a freelancer, I just don't think I can get around at all in Baghdad. I can't afford bodyguards and all the rigmarole that they have there. Plus, many, many journalists are there, and it's just too damn dangerous. Basra is a bit quieter. It's much quieter, actually. But I'm also interested in Shia Islam. I didn't know anything about Islam, and now I know a lot, but it's all from a prism of Shiism. I write in the Red Zone about my experience with the Shiites. And I just think that when Iraq gets on its feet and the economy starts humming, I think Basra is going to be one of its main engines of economic development. Also, I think it's going to be one of the main engines of a sort of a ascendant Shiism throughout the whole Middle East. And I'd like to get on the ground floor and see that, you know, lay the groundwork and watch it happen.
Now, how long has it been since you were in Iraq last?
About a year.
And what differences do you see? Obviously, Baghdad, you've already talked about, but what differences do you anticipate both in the country and in your own, the experience you're looking forward to?
Well, that's a great question, because when I was there before, I could basically travel anywhere I wanted by myself, you know, just hop in a car with a bunch of other Iraqis, pay a driver and go down to Basra, go to Kirkuk, go to Ramadi, Fallujah. The travel was safe. Now that's impossible. Especially as a foreigner, there's now a bounty on foreigners' heads. You know, the kidnapping criminal gangs are kidnapping, or Al-Qaeda are kidnapping Westerners. So as I referred earlier in the conversation, my freedom of movement is really prescribed or circumscribed. So that's a big difference. And, of course, from the Iraqi point of view, which we probably should be talking more about, you know, the country's violent. A lot of the promises of democracy haven't yet, borne any fruit. There's a lot of frustration. And, crime again is just rampant.
Now, this is King Banyan from SESC Scholars. Stephen, I'm trying to find out why Basra, and you said something that was really interesting, that you think it's going to be a hub for economic development. Well, it's already the second largest city. It's a port city.
Exactly. Oil.
And so the oil, all the oil transships through Basra that goes out on ship.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going through the pipelines to the north into Turkey. So the question is, do you see the development development of Iraq economically still centering around oil, or do we expect there to be some kind of, I mean, what's the economy of Iraq going to look like in 10 years, given your description already of sort of a kleptocracy, a thugocracy going on there?
Well, I think it's going to be oil. Of course, it's going to be oil-based. They don't produce anything. The whole Middle East doesn't, you know, it's not a manufacturing center yet. In my mind, and this may be heretical to some listeners, although maybe not your listeners, I would like to see the oil industry privatized so that the government doesn't turn it into a patronage mill like we've seen, you know, in constant other Middle Eastern countries. And hopefully the Iraqi economy will somehow diversify. I mean, they have a strong agricultural sector. It's interesting to note that Iraq has never had a famine.
That's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, because of the rivers. It's got water, it's got a lot. I mean, it's incredible, the food markets. A place like Karbala I went to, I mean, it's just overflowing with fruit and vegetables and everything you can imagine. Iraqi people tend to be a bit on the overweight side. And so I think, you know, that there's a framework and for a diversified economy, but I think it's going to be oil-based. But can I add another interest about Basra? It just slipped my mind, actually.
Please.
This may be the most important one. I personally am interested in the relationship, like most of us are these days, between women and Islam. And in Basra, I'm sorry?
Go ahead. Carry on.
Women and Islam. And in Basra, we're seeing, it's like a petri dish of what happens to women's rights when fundamentalist Islam takes control of a municipality. The religious parties are in firm political control, apparently, of Basra. And I'm hearing from my friend Noor, who I wrote about quite a bit in the Red Zone, you know, women's rights are just being curtailed drastically. So it's kind of a petri dish of what can happen when this fundamentalism takes over a city, and it's something I really want to see.
Well, I think, you know, you knew there was going to be a vacuum once you removed Saddam, and it's not a surprise to me, certainly, as a student of economic development and political development, it comes along with it, that when you move a dictatorship, that certainly religious parties have an easier time forming because they already have a common bond. And frequently, and certainly in the case of Saddam's 1990 view of how the Baathists would develop, that in fact, the religious parties would have a much easier time developing. But you're saying that's coming in directly to women's rights within.
Well, yeah, Basra. In Basra, and this is actually going on when I wrote about this in the Red Zone. This was going on when I was there a year ago. You know, you're absolutely right. But also factor in when central authority collapses, the criminal gangs also take control, and they're also organized, and they have guns, and the moxie and the know-how to assert their will. In Basra, we are seeing the intertwining of criminal gangs and religious parties.
Sure.
And the British told me about this. The British don't do anything about it. And so it's a real kind of phenomenon of, a thugocracy with a green Islamic banner. And as you say, the people who are really bearing the brunt of this are women. And... it's a sad, sad situation, and I think it needs to be written about more. And that's another reason I want to go.
651-289-4488. When we come back from a break, we're going to take your questions on the phone lines for Stephen Vincent, author of Into the Red Zone, and hopefully an upcoming book on his third trip to Iraq, which is commencing on Monday. We'll be taking your calls when we return. 651-289-4488. You're listening to the Northern Alliance Radio Network, AM 1280 The Patriot. Go nowhere, Twin Cities. The fun has just begun.
The Northern Alliance Radio Network on AM 1280 The Patriot.
AM 1280 The Patriot, the Northern Alliance Radio Network, reminding you that coming up very shortly here is Laura Ingraham's special event, The Evening on the Lake. It almost sounds like an opera, but no, it is indeed an evening of profound political common sense coming up with Laura Ingraham, June 3rd, 2005. Tickets are not yet on sale, but the demand is causing the very building that we sit in to quiver with anticipation here. It's going to be an amazing event. Laura Ingraham's Evening on the Lake, June 3rd, 2005. Stay tuned for information on getting tickets on the website, am1280thepatriot.com, or just, again, keep giving Jay Larson a call. He'll cough up the info of it. eventually here. We're talking with Stephen Vincent, author of Into the Red Zone, one of my favorite books about the Iraq situation so far. And we were talking before we took our break, Stephen, about your upcoming trip this next week to Iraq to hopefully work on your next book on the subject. And we're talking, and you're focusing on Basra. Now, you mentioned the fact that, that Basra is the British zone, if you will. And the British traditionally have a very different approach to dealing with civilian government, dealing with civilians in wartime, and also their approach to dealing with local authority and insurgencies. Now, Basra, you mentioned, has become quite the hotbed for the religious parties and the intertwining of religious and criminal groups in Iraq. Do you think the approach the British took, their less interventionist approach than the American authorities, at least in theory, has had something to do with this?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the word on the street in Basra and up in Baghdad was that the British had cut a deal with the Dawah Islamiya and the Supreme Council for Islamic Revolution in Iraq, which are the two main Shia parties. They cut a deal with those groups. You know, we'll stay on our side of the street, you stay on yours, and basically let those groups go about doing their business.
Something that the Americans would never have dreamt of doing, I'm presuming here.
I think so. I mean, I remember the head of counterintelligence for the CPA down in Basra told Noor and I about, you know, laid out all this criminal action that was going on, you know, Iranians especially, smuggling oil and gas, and there was drug dealing, and there was assassination of Christian wine merchants going on, you know, like Chicago in the 1920s. And Noor asked a very basic question, well, what are you guys doing about it? And he said, that's a matter for the Iraqi police, not us. And Noor said, the Iraqi police are corrupt. They're either corrupt or they're in the pocket of the religious parties. And he just shrugged. It got to be the kind of CPA shrug I saw a lot down in Basra, where we would raise these issues, and the Brits would just sort of shrug. What can we do about it?
Very laissez-faire approach to things, from what I've been told.
And then they would tell about how, you know, how the Americans, you know, certainly bollocks up Baghdad, didn't they? And I would think, yeah, because, you know, they're trying to put an end to this kind of stuff.
651-289-4488 if you have questions for Stephen Vincent, author of Into the Red Zone and an upcoming book on his way back to Iraq. Bud, welcome to the Northern Alliance Radio Network with Stephen Vincent.
Yeah, thank you. I have a quick question, kind of semi-suggestion. What do you know about the Marsh Arabs, and would you investigate them and include a chapter on them in your next book?
Funny you should ask. I was just in an email, a phone conversation, actually, with the Baroness Emma Nicholson, who's I think she's a former MP, was very high up in the Blair administration. I apologize if she's still an active
You know, when it comes down to the details, you can pretty much say anything you want. None of us will be able to question you on it just yet, so you're
okay,
safe.
All right. Well, I just, you know, I'm a journalist. I want to be accurate.
Fair enough.
But she heads up an organization called AMAR, which stands for, the Marsh Arabs makes up the M and the A in that that title. I can't remember what the whole title means. But she is concentrating on the marshlands. And, you know, Bud's absolutely right. That's a great idea, great suggestion. I've been talking to her about getting up there. And apparently her organization is willing to give me a tour of the area.
So let's talk about the transition to democracy. Now, obviously, as we've touched on very briefly, the British approach to Basra and their zone, if you will, is, you know, with a more hands-off approach, the more, I guess some would call it realpolitik approach to dealing with the different factions in Iraqi society there, has had its impact, apparently, on the way government is transacted in the Basra area. But how do you think the Iraqis in general, broadly speaking, are making the transition to democracy? Obviously, the election was a big event, but how's that manifesting itself in the lives of actual Iraqis today, as far as you've seen?
Well, from the point of view of the Iraqi, average Iraqi, not much. The government has just appointed its top people, but there's no cabinet been formed. And, you know, what's worse is there just isn't, we, and here in the United States, we talk a lot about democracy in theory, but to an Iraqi, that means, you know, having some electricity and clean water and being able to send your kids to school without worrying about them getting kidnapped, and where you don't hear car bombs going off all day and night, and when you can drive to the Baghdad airport to see your family off on a flight and not have to worry about being killed on the way over there. These things are just, all the Lockean principles about democracy and Jeffersonian ideas and all that are fine, but the Iraqis want to see some, you know, on-the-ground, direct improvement in their lives, and boy, do they need it, and do they deserve it.
It's interesting, isn't it, that what we think of as building democracy is not really what's in mind for these people. What's in mind for them is actually building a market economy. And I'm struck by this idea that, you know, on one hand, we're going to develop the country through oil and maybe through agriculture. These are things that are very easy for the state to control because you know where the oil is, you know where the plants are. It's really easy to figure that out. And on the other hand, we look over at the sort of the distribution system, and parts of the distribution system are still state controlled, the hospitals, the power, and so on. You know, I wish all that stuff had been privatized. I mean, all of it. And that was certainly the reaction of the early CPA, but later on they really walked away from that, I think.
Yeah, also you have to add in that these ministries will probably end up being run as ethnic or confessional fiefdoms. Clan interests will control certain industries and other clans will control others. And now, but it won't look like a free market system as we know it. But, you know, I think if the Iraqis get some security, if the police force is independent and not paid off thugs, if they have an independent judiciary, a rule of law, all the basic things we take for granted, that would be such a great step forward, not only for Iraq, but for the whole Middle East.
Now, you're married, Stephen Vincent, right?
Yes.
Okay, now your wife has put up with two of these trips to Iraq so far. This time around, is she more worried, less worried, or does she have a different set of worries than she did the first go around?
I think she's a little less worried about my safety because Basra, as far as the violence goes, is not as bad as Baghdad is or was. And also, I mean, without getting into too much detail about my own personal affairs, I'm just not going to be throwing myself out onto the country as I did before. I mean, I went there to have experiences and to see what Iraq was like. Now I kind of hope I don't have experiences and just be able to interview people and do some slow, methodical journalism.
So you've retired your Yugoslavian alter ego?
Yeah. Well, I'll break it out if I need it, believe me.
Yeah.
I want to be very, very cautious. So, you know, right. I'm not going to be doing the kind of daring do that I did before.
Yeah, one of the advantages I've always had is because I'm Armenian, I'm fairly dark-skinned. I can walk into these places, and as long as I don't open my mouth, it's fine. What's the living
situation? Wait. Inch Bastas.
Ah, shad love you, Inch Bastas.
There we go. I'm
Armenian. I'm very impressed. I didn't know that.
Your what hurts?
I'm interested in this. So if you are half Armenian, you do get the little advantage of being able to walk around some. If you keep your mouth shut, it doesn't matter too much. What's the living situation going to be like?
In 30 seconds or less.
I have to find hotel, guarded hotel, and then I'm told I should change hotels every 3 or 4 days.
Wow. Okay.
But then again, you know, people always tend to exaggerate security threats. When people move to New York, I did the same thing back in the 80s, so you never really know.
You change hotels every 3 or 4 days in New York?
Not in New York, but
I know
not in the condition of the hotels then, believe me.
I know I change cabs every couple blocks myself just to be safe. Stephen Vincent, on your way back to Iraq, best of luck to you, both with the book and the trip, and we hope to talk to you again when you return.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much. Stephen Vincent, author of Into the Red Zone and an upcoming book, also one of our favorite blogs out there, In the Red Zone. It's linked on all of our blogs, among the Northern Alliance, so make sure you check that out as well.